But the world has all kinds of problems, one of which is massively widening wealth and income inequalities. The reason for putting up this one is to say that the place in the planet with the lowest infant mortality rate in the world is Singapore. But Singapore doesn't celebrate the fact it has the lowest infant mortality rate in the world. And it has a very, very good health service in Singapore, but the reason it doesn't celebrate the fact is that the reason Singapore has such a low infant mortality rate is that the servants are not allowed to get pregnant. They're pregnancy tested and deported before they can have their children. So don't always think that a good statistic is necessarily a good statistic. This is a graph of the average wealth of the super rich, possibly reducing. And these things are connected. I began by talking about 100 years ago, about 1913. 1913 was the peak of inequality in wealth in this country. From 1913 onwards, the rich got less, the poor got more, life of the poor got better, and fertility declined. It declined so fast, partly, that by the 1930s, and partly also because of mass unemployment, there were projections that said that this country would run out of people by the year 2000. So it gives you an idea about how wild these projections vary. There are, of course, lots and lots of problems in the world, but I think you should rank these problems by which are worse and which are not so bad, rather than simply list them all and say, we've had it. If you just take all the worst things you can think of and put them on a big list and say how bad it is, the algae bloom, the rest, you can easily become depressed and think we have no chance. Food is less of a problem than water. The wonderful thing about food, the brilliant thing about food, is that you can't eat that much of it and feel good. Imagine if you could eat 10 or 20 times more food than somebody else, and it was great to eat that much food. If that happened, we'd have a real problem in the world. But because you become seriously ill if you eat an enormous amount of food, human beings are not going to hopefully do that. And so you've got a finite amount of food that you need to deliver to people, which in this country has actually been declining rapidly because we don't exercise enough, we don't walk enough, we don't cycle enough, and our homes are too warm, so we don't shiver enough. So our calorie intake has actually gone down and down. Now we need to eat more vegetables, we need to eat less meat, but food honestly is, I would say, and I'm trying not to be too controversial when I'm feeding the 9 billion is on the 30th of October. But I see food as less of a problem of other things. Water is harder. We've got many people living in parts of the world where there is insufficient water, but water is renewable. Soil is worse than water. Climate is harder than soil. War, we seem to forget, we're very good at. You can raise all kinds of problems, all kinds of things we're going to run out of. Rare elements is one of the things that make your phone work, or the things that make the catalytic converter work in your car. But we don't necessarily need people driving around in cars in the future. That's a very recent thing. This is another population cartogram. Well, it's not population, it's elemental units of the universe. But because I can't resist these things, I thought I'd show you what the Earth's crust looks like, viewing from the point of view of the periodic table. And the more you zoom in, the more you find. I promised to talk about recent events in the UK. This graph is showing you that as life expectancy increases, as people live longer, they tend to have fewer children. These are all countries. I tested this earlier, and I'm sure none of you can read the names of the countries, but the two which are not behaving are Russia and the United Kingdom. That's our little mini baby boom there. See, a few more babies? It's a temporary thing. We've got a fairly good idea about the reasons why we've got a little baby boom, but it's temporary for us. Much more important is understanding just how low fertility has got in much of the rest of the world. This is the provinces of Iran. Only in the most mountainous and least urban area, you're seeing 3 children or more. Muslim countries, it's well worth saying this, I think, because people seem to have the opposite idea. Muslim countries have a lower fertility rate than non-Muslim countries with the same amount of wealth, which is very, very low. Tikopia. Tikopia gets overused as an example. It's another Pacific island. Pacific islands are lovely to map. But Tikopia is an example of human beings living for many thousands of years in a relatively stable state. But they partly did it by practicing infanticide. We no longer have to practice infanticide because we have contraception. That's relatively recent. The really sad thing about Tikopia is that the water's about to come over here. So after 4,000 years of sustainable human existence, the rest of us outside have finally got it. And the brackish, slightly fresh water there is going to go. There are currently incredible changes occurring worldwide to human beings. This graph is showing you the rapid increase in people going to university. A majority of graduates at the moment worldwide are women. Think about the RGS only accepting female fellows in 1912. And within 101 years, you have a majority of graduates in the world that are female. We are changing as a species dramatically quickly. Let's get back to those projections and 10 or 11 or 9 billion to end on. This is the only bit of original work I did. So give me a couple of minutes to explain this to you, if just you and me. This thing is a change in change in change. If you take the UN numbers about how many people there have been and how many people there will be, and you take the difference between any 2 years, you get the change, how many more or how many fewer people there'll be. Almost always more. If you take the difference again, you get the change in change. You get the measure of acceleration. Is it going up faster? Is it going up slower? Up until here is what's happened. So this is what's happened. This is real data. And this is what's projected to happen. And I think this is silly. I think this is too smooth, too stable, and it misses out something quite key in what has happened. And the key thing that has happened here is that the gap between these two peaks is about 18 years and the gap between these two peaks is about 22 years. And what we know about this is that we're not talking about elephants or guinea pigs or fruit flies. What we're looking at is human beings. And what did human beings used to do roughly 18 years apart? And now worldwide they do every 22 years, and in Europe they do every 30 years, and in Japan, where Tomokai comes from, they do about every 35 years now. They have other human beings. So what you're looking at are worldwide baby booms, an acceleration in babies, a reduction in babies, an acceleration again, a reduction again, an acceleration again. Our historic data is very, very poor. Our current data is very poor. We had a baby boom in America and here shortly after the Second World War. We had an even bigger one after the First World War. But it wasn't just here there's a baby boom. In China after the revolution and in India after independence, there were also more than usual babies born. They then have more than usual babies, who then have more than usual babies. And in the end, you're left with this tiny little thing, which is the echo of those previous booms, which is what the United Nations is currently basing its estimates on, which is why they've gone up to 11 billion at the moment. But supposing the future isn't like this. Supposing what the future actually is, and I literally just scribble this on, is this. And that is, and we'll find out very soon if this is true, because we're going to have to see a reduction in births that's quite dramatic worldwide. Although a worldwide economic recession tends to get you that. What then happens if you get that pattern? And you can produce it slightly more sophisticatedly if you actually just take the past and copy it forward. And if you do that, you get 7.4 billion. But we have no idea what's going to happen. There's a huge range of possibilities. What we tend to know is that if things go badly wrong, if we have a world war, if we had a pandemic like we had in 1918, people respond by having more children. So what you have to hope for and work for and try and engineer and realise it's in your interest to get is stability. If you have stability, if you avoid war, if you feed people, if they get pensions, if they can see that they'll be okay in old age without having more children themselves, then they have less children. And when I say they, I should say women. Because it's women who primarily make, increasingly, the decisions about how many children to have, and who don't want, in the large part, to have 3 or 4 or 5 children. And the untalked about revolution that's occurred worldwide is the increasing power of women everywhere, from Turkey, from Iran, from Afghanistan even. And you can see it through the birth figures. It isn't that we have a utopia, we still have millions of female fetuses being aborted as opposed to men. But you can see the increasing power of poor women through the declining number of children that people are bearing. Come back to this graph. This is Angus's data, again showing you the average growth, going up to that unsustainable 2.3% when the Population Bomb book was written. And then the decline that we've seen, and then this is a UN projection. And that little bump that we're currently going through is what gets us to 10 or 11. That's all it takes at the moment. If that goes down faster, which is happening across Asia, but we don't tend to look at Chinese cities as a pattern for the future, we think London's the future. Whereas London may have been more about the past. If you look at Shanghai, if you look at Hong Kong, if you look at Beijing, you'll see that it is much more normal there for all kinds of reasons, not at least housing pressures, to have just a single child, not to have two. In which case, this comes down faster, and we never get up to there. But even if we get up to there, or even if we go higher, that isn't necessarily a problem, because it's what people do, it's what they consume. One person from here who decides they want to go shopping 3 times a year in New York causes far, far more pollution than 100 people in the Yemen who don't even go shopping in the Yemen. This is the last complicated graph, I promise you, and it is almost impossible to understand. So don't feel bad if you don't understand it. But it's about GDP growth, and it's showing you the slowdown in the 1970s. That occurred. And it gets back to that second argument I had. Remember, the first argument I've got is that we may be going for a mini world baby boom, so that our population estimates may be too high. We shouldn't worry so much or be necessarily think we're going to get that many people. But even if we get 7 billion people, if they behave badly, we've had it. If you have 7 billion people who all want a car, who all want to fly, you can't do that. But this to me is more interesting, but more complicated and more dodgy, would be the technical word. There's a remarkable correlation between human population growth, where it first began and how it spread, and the spread of economic growth. The two are related because when you get rich mercantile countries invading other countries, one of the things that they do first, or colonise them, is they break up the existing social systems. When you break up the existing social systems, you break up the mechanisms by which people manage to control their population. We did this internally here. When we enclosed the fields so that people no longer had their own little slot, people had to leave the village. When you were in the village, you made pretty damn sure that you behaved yourself, because you had to wait until you were able to marry before you could have a child. That was our form of population control before the Enclosure Act. The Enclosure Act broke that down. So they broke down the social system, population began to grow in the UK and in other parts of Europe. When we and a few other countries, but mainly us, often coming back to celebrate in this building, went to other parts of the world. We upset existing social systems, and you can see their population zooming off initially. But when their population zoomed off initially in these other parts of the world, that was great for business, because that was expanding markets. You could sell people more goods. You could sell them more steel for more railways. You could sell them more tickets for more trains, because more people had to get on to more trains. But since the 1970s, as we have fewer people, that basic way of making more money simply by being just as good as you were the year before, but having an ever-expanding customer base, that becomes more problematic. I've got three or four maps just to end with, to try to give you an idea about how I see this and see where we're going, and then please think of some questions for me. I should say these maps are drawn by Ben, not by me. And this is zoomed in, so it's fairly unclear, but we'll zoom out in a minute. This is where we are at the moment. We're actually in the middle of this bright little blob here. Let's make it a bit simpler. And you can begin to get scared of what's happening down here. This is India, which is very large. It's the Earth at night image that you're seeing. It's the image that's created by a series of satellite photos put together and then slightly tweaked with to make it appear there's no cloud, that shows where the light's on around the world at night. This image is normally presented as an image about where people are when you show it on a normal map. But when you show it on this map, of course, there are people everywhere. And if there aren't people there, we've got rid of them. So this is the Sahara. Right, from the point of view of a human geographer, completely boring. I know physical geographers like deserts, but from the point of view of a human geographer, it helps to get rid of the Sahara. So if you can see any land on this map, there are people there. So the light isn't showing you where people are. And the light isn't just showing you where people have got electricity. Because we know that people have got electricity in all of this place here. The light is showing you where there are people who have so much electricity and so much spare money that they don't mind shining lights up into the sky for satellites to be able to take a picture of them. Right? On the cartogram, this is a map of pollution, not a map of people. Let's take it way out. And so here is India, here is China, here is Africa, the same size. I'm very used now to this map. And this map reassures me. This map makes me think of the world much more as a collection of people who have a lot in common, rather than areas that are strange and far away and you might want to explore or travel to. But it may have different effects on you. But the point of showing you the map is to say that most people in the world, particularly most people in Africa, are not wasting what resources they have. It's people on the eastern seaboard of the United States, in Europe, and if we click forward, in Japan, who are wasting the most. So seeing people as a problem is silly, because of course these are the areas that are declining in population, beginning to decline rapidly in population, but wasting too much. So there's almost an inverse relationship between where there are fewer people and where we are having fewer babies. We aren't learning very well how not to pollute. Although if you look again at Japan and at Tokyo, if we click forward one last time, you may see that it's dimmed slightly recently, but other areas, this is Cairo, before the recent events in Cairo, have become brighter. I should say Ben Hennig, who's sitting in the front, drew this, not me. But it's a map of humanity. Every little dot there is a few hundred people, and you're seeing all the dots at once. And I think what you need to worry about, if you're worrying about people in the future, isn't about the fact that this is about to increase by 30% or 40% in area. What you have to worry about is how can you stop areas like this getting bigger and bigger as people waste power? And you have to begin stopping that in places like this, and this, and this, and now China, along the seaboard. It's what we waste that is a problem, not how many of us there are to waste it. Because for the first time ever, outside of a time of pandemic and war and other major disaster, our numbers are about to decrease, and they could decrease within my children's lifetimes. So why scare our children about people when our children are going to be the first people ever, possibly, to live at a time when there are not more people out of human choice? We've got enough problems to worry about that we need to worry about, rather than worrying about each other. Thank you very much.
We have got time for a few minutes for questions.